Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on this lovely, June 21st.
Yeah, it's the longest day of the year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. This is the solstice, so the days start to shrink again. So if you didn't get your work done by now, the pressure's on.
I think or pay your taxes.
Two or three days of kind of long days and the rest of it.
Yeah, we're going to actually celebrate that by doing a four-hour podcast tonight.
Yeah. It's always possible. I mean, I think we could do one.
Yeah, without notes or anything. We'd just yammer, but we'd bore the crap out of some people. I could talk about shoes for 3 hours.
Yeah, you could.
Somebody actually wrote me this week. He wrote me, says, I don't know what I like better, your discussion of when the airport and how disgusted you are or your rants about Bernanke.
What is it about the have you been to the airport recently?
No,
I was there the other day, saw a couple of barefoot people roaming around.
I don't mind the barefoot thing. It's just the whole – I don't want to talk about it. Come on. It's just the whole thing.
Let's talk about Greece.
Yeah, good enough. Riots in the street, by the way. There was a big vote this evening on they have a different governmental structure there, right? So there's this – you've heard this before in some places, vote of confidence. And they had this confidence vote on the current government so that the government can then go ahead and do some of the important austerity steps that they're going to do to win the final tranche. This is important, the final tranche of the bailout money that they already had agreed to because it was being held back. And they needed that money to make it through through July, or else they'd go out of business.
So what do you think the riots are all about?
Because the austerity measures are deeper than they were, and there's going to be a total of about 21% of total GDP is being cut. So you have all these people that don't have jobs. Those people are going to probably have to pay some kind of higher taxes, their property taxes. If they get a job, they're going to get paid less, pay higher taxes. They're cutting police. They're cutting fire. They're cutting all the civil servants. I mean, they're cutting all over the place. And they're going to be charged, start to change the retirement benefits. So it's just a mess. And a small country like that having to cut that much out of their budget, you wonder where all the money went to.
Probably went to some, corrupt politicians. I don't know.
Well, there was a big this is what happened this week. There was there's a few different sides of this equation, but one of the sides said there's no way we're going to allow this austerity to go through. It's going to kill our country. You know, there's no way we're going to have growth. And the prime minister was losing some power, so he reshuffled his cabinet. There was a big to-do about his reshuffling his cabinet. He moved one or two people around. That was it. They had this vote tonight. It went, I think he won by 4 votes. Overall, he had to get 151. He got 155 votes. And right after that, the streets erupted because now these people that are in Greece that have been having to pay through the nose for all the mishandling of funds, we'll call it, or the disaster of 2007, 2008, or the overlending, whatever it was, are now going to have to really buckle down much more than they want to. And they're like, wait a minute, you're getting all this money to fund everything, but we're not getting any of it and we're getting screwed. Either way, Greece is screwed on this deal.
So what does it mean to the market, though?
Well, the market was all excited that it looked like there was a good chance that this would actually happen. Remember, the market only cares right now about what's happening right in front of them. The problem is that even though Greece is going to get this, it seems they're going to get this, well, actually, it's not a done deal yet, but they're going to get the final tranche of this money. That's just $16 billion or so. There's another $160 billion that needs to be brought to them with an entirely new – this has not even been considered yet through the IMF and the EU in order to keep this whole deal going forward. So we just kicked the can down the road maybe 1 month here. So the markets are going to be they were excited that this is going to come to some kind of resolution. A lot of people are betting that the euro is going to skyrocket and do great. I have a contrary opinion.
All right.
I just don't think that this is good for the euro. I think that the payment and the realization that there is so many problems within Greece and that they're going to need extra money is going to keep the markets very rocky. The euro is going to actually be bouncing all over the place, which is going to keep markets moving all over the place. And I think the big up we got was in anticipation. You may see us sell the news. It may not be a big sell, but you're going to see a sell the news.
Yeah, that's what I would think. The euro is already high. I mean, how much higher should it be?
It hit 144 and change today.
Yeah.
It went up a penny today, which is a lot. So, and the dollar went down about 0.5% today. Bernanke's talking tomorrow. And I think that
so is Obama.
Well, Bernanke's more important.
Yeah, but I think
for the markets.
In this case, I'm not sure that Obama's going to talk about getting out of Afghanistan. That should affect the markets.
You think so?
Well, I would hope.
He's talking about the end of 2012. I mean, yeah, that will, but I think it's probably a lot of political lip service at this point because many presidents have talked about getting out of a particular war, and whatever the date they've picked has been postponed many times, right?
Yeah.
So I think that he needs to be garnering some political benefit from this because his ratings are dropping.
Yeah, I noticed.
Really bad. You know, between the joblessness and the economy slacking off and the concerns about Europe and the wars, I mean, and now you have the start of another whole phenomenon, right? Or at least a cycle where you have he's not the focal point so much against just the Republicans. Now he's got to fend up all these individual Republicans that are going to attack him as they go to on their road for the presidential campaign. So now he's got all these other gnats out there that are going to be bugging him.
All right. So I was looking at something that was kind of like deep in thought, mainly because I'm looking at there's a ticker OSIS.
Is that the medical little medical company? Biotech?
No, I think it's I don't know what they do. I think they're a semiconductor. They make rubber. They make stamping equipment or something like that. But the CEO is Deepak Chopra.
Oh, come on. I think that's a different Deepak Chopra.
That's what I think. But I mean, now I began to think to myself, how many Deepak Chopras are there in the world?
He's 59 years old. Well, that's about his age, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Let's see if there's a picture of him, of a biography. Once a practicing.
No, so you're making this up. you're not that. It was like coming down Broadway. That's unbelievable.
Yep, he holds many jobs. No, I don't think so. I bet you did a list. There's a lot of them, but maybe it's his brother. But so, why were you happening to looking at that? I mean, what kind of search were you possibly doing?
I was actually on FinViz.
Oh, okay.
And I was looking at the last euro, which was $1.4368 at the moment. And then I always look at latest insider trading, noticing that Larry Page has dumped a bunch of $28 million worth of Google stock.
Yeah, he has a lot of confidence in management.
And then he's the new guy.
I understand.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Of course, he could be betting against himself.
Right.
So, and then I look over to the left, and boom, there it is. Deepak Chopra is just to exercise some shares, some options.
Maybe he's maybe some kind of psychological chip that just gets embedded in the brain to buy books.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, so listen, we were talking about this Sino Forest thing, right? Sino Forest?
Yeah.
This is the Chinese tree planting company that there was this accusation by Muddy Waters that they overstated their timber holdings and all this good stuff, right? So you went long and you made a chunk of money on it in our little game that we do. And you were stopped out, which is a good thing, actually. And what's really interesting about this is that we found out that John Paulson, the famous John Paulson, who made a ton of money on the betting against the homes and the whole banking situation back in 2007-08, he had a chunk of this.
Oh.
More than a chunk. Chunk is being kind.
Huh.
He had a position in this that what was interesting is that he came out and defended the company, saying he had he was supporting the company and believes that this will all pass. Well, meanwhile, we find out, fast forward a week, he dumped all his shares, taking a paper loss of $720 million.
Really?
Yep. And which is about 3% of his total portfolio, the $30 billion he has there. And then, maybe 4%. So, also, the Davis funds lost $600 million on the deal.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of money that was lost on this whole little deal. And we still don't know what the story is, but there's been still some additional commentary out of newspapers and some other people that said, yeah, they really are overstating this. And I think the shares dropped another 20% today.
Hmm. Well, it ran up enough for me to get out.
Yeah, it was great. Great little play there. That's what, you know, that the importance of that is following the news, a healthy dose of luck, you know, because we happen to do it on a Tuesday night talking about it for a Wednesday. And but the point is that following the news and understanding what some of the things maybe mean or don't mean, I think is an important part of the investing process.
Yeah, especially if you try to analyze or you see something that's well, a lot of the things I've done on our little game have been looking for anomalies. You know, yep. Things that have been run down for some unknown reason that nobody can back up, but the stock took a huge beating. And so you just say, well, this doesn't look right. And you just go the other way.
Right.
Or in the case of some of these things like Friend Finder Networks.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense that the stock's at what it was, and let alone still high.
Right. Let me mention that this podcast is sponsored by the Emotional and Physical Pain Institute with Deepak Chopra as the head of that.
Also the CEO of a small semiconductor company.
Yeah. He's just this guy is brilliant. He multitasking like you can't believe. All right. So that what happened. Bernanke's going to speak tomorrow, as I mentioned. And there's this new format where they release the Fed decision on whether or not to raise or change their stance on policy, which nobody believes is going to be raising rates, right? You don't think that, do you?
I don't.
Nobody thinks that.
Nobody thinks that it's not going to happen.
No. And they don't think that he's going to change any of his wording, the big old extended period for keeping stimulus or loose monetary policy. But what he does now is, while these are released at 12:15, at 2 o'clock, this is brand new to the Fed, he takes on and does a Q&A live. So you have the Fed, the head of the Fed now doing, you know, asking, you know, questions like he'll be asked, hey, are you going to maybe do QE3? You know, what's the plan for this? What's about the, you know, so now you have this live interaction that I think it's scripted. I'm pretty sure that all the questions are pre-screened and everybody behaves themselves.
It wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of that kind of bull crap Q&A that goes on nowadays. You know, I think it's interesting that he does this.
Why?
Well, it seems as though he's one of those guys. I think he'd rather speak off the cuff than he would prepare. And I think these questions are prepared, but I think he ad-libs the answers. I don't get the sense that he's reading anything.
Well, let me tell you something. Seriously, there is such scrutiny on every single word and movement that he will portray during this that I would be hard-pressed to believe that anything he says has not been either pre-scripted or at least very rehearsed.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It does make some sense that he would do that.
I mean, he could tank a market in 3 seconds or drive it up incorrectly, either one.
Do you have any bets on QE3?
I don't see QE3, but here's a little, maybe a stupidity comment. I see 2.5. 2.5. What that means is I don't think they're going to have any level of additional funds to do the quantitative easing like they did. I don't think the political will is there, and the people would protest, and the rating agencies would have a horror show with this. They'd be totally flipped out. But taking the actual proceeds from the bonds that are going to come due and reinvesting them will be a process that will be very much agreeable, and I think it will do a good job at keeping rates down. There's also something called, I think it's called twisting, QE twisting. So there's a new term that's being used that is going to be involved in some behind-the-scenes movements with maybe changing bank requirements or maybe this kind of a situation where they reinvest and just do some funny things. So we'll see, but I don't think that there's going to be any change. I think that he realizes that the economic growth has slowed dramatically on a global basis and in the U.S. Every number you see has been very much slow. It's either up or down these days. There's no like kind of just, you know, moderate. And it slowed down at a time when it's really bad to slow down with the European situation, with China tightening, India tightening, Brazil tightening. and oil prices the way they were. And on top of that, unemployment benefits wearing out, no new jobs hiring of any significance. And then add to that that there's no more quantitative easing pushing down markets, you know, beating up the dollar. Remember something? The big issue with quantitative easing was to reflate the economy by pushing up commodities, making people go out and buy risk assets, and by pushing up values of the stock market. That was something they wanted to do in order to create a wealth effect. They also wanted to do it for housing, and that never happened.
It didn't work.
No, it didn't work so well. Nope.
I mean, the idea is sound, it seems. I mean, when you look at it from a distance, hey, let's just take the Treasury put so much pressure on the buy side that they have no return whatsoever, so nobody's going to want to buy them, so they're going to look for a place to put their money. And so let's watch them put it in the market or invest it in small business or startups or whatever, and nobody did any of that. They just sat on the money.
Well, the problem, I talked about this today in my office. The problem is that this was talked about in an academic sense. And academically and mathematically, it makes sense. I think they forgot to include the fear factor and worry factor of individuals and personalities that will be risk averse to buying a house knowing that just 2 years ago it collapsed on them and that they need to start saving more money because what if? And I think they, you know, the institutions bought into it, the businesses bought into it, but the individuals have yet to buy into this.
Well, the individuals seem to work on a herd mentality.
Yeah.
And unless you can whip them into a frenzy, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, it is like wildebeest, isn't it?
Yeah, and then the thing is, it's like I don't know, 5 years, 10 years from now, I don't know, maybe 7 years from now, let's say, when the market, the housing market, we know will be turned around, hopefully by then. And the prices will start to skyrocket again, especially in short areas like California where there's really not enough houses for the people. And it starts to go up again. There'll be a feeding frenzy, and people will be buying, bidding things up like crazy when they could have got – right now, if you can get a loan, which is, of course, a big question, you can buy stuff for nothing.
Yeah. It's like the stock market, what happened today.
A friend of mine, by the way, bought a condo. I had to talk him into it. He's a professor in Arizona, and or got a job at ASU, and he's renting. He's, you know, I said he knows there's a big condo complex walking distance to his office at the school.
Oh, perfect.
1/3 the original offering price for these things. I think they were normally I don't know, $600,000 or something. They're like going for like less than $175,000, and he was just fretting over this purchase, which I talked him into doing.
Now, what was his problem? What was his concern? I mean, what was the problem?
I have no idea. It was just fear. And I said, well, are you kidding? You know, I had to beat him up with, what are you, crazy?
I mean, probably get in for less than he's paying for rent.
Yeah. Well, it is, as a matter of fact. And he's got an investment that's already in the tank. I mean, it's not going to go down in price, that's for sure. And probably just selling it at less than the cost of making it. And he's happy as a clam now.
Well, if the argument is that he's paying less for it than he would on rent, that's it. So you don't have to go any further. I mean, the rest of it, who cares? Unless that he gets a job somewhere else and he has to sell it or whatever.
Right, having to sell it would be a problem. But at the same time, it seems to be an investment property at the moment. But this is everywhere. I mean, he's just one of many people that are just sitting on their hands when they should be, you know, moving into houses at these prices. I don't know.
You think that some of it has to do with the mobility factor of individuals, where there's concern that the job that they may have may not be in the place they live at this time, and they have to be ready to move somewhere?
And I think that must be a factor.
Yeah, there's obviously a real big fear of. Well, the other thing is that I know somebody who recently was looking at some homes, and these are townhomes down on the east side of Fort Lauderdale, and the prices were like $400,000 for a 3-bedroom. And I said, what is that? How could that be so expensive? I guess they were originally $600,000. And on top of it, you have to pay the taxes that they want at, let's say, 2%, 1.5%, 2%, and the closing fees or whatever. I mean, you talk about $16,000 in closing fees. And you have to pay – I mean, by the time you're done with that kind of a deal, it makes no sense for a townhouse, except for the fact you're on the east side of town, which is, you know, more expensive.
Hmm.
But they really haven't gone down all that much if you really, I think, consider
well,
all that.
But the San Francisco houses haven't really collapsed either, and some other parts of the country are, I mean, they've dropped 20% or so, but they haven't, like, tanked like some of the places around certain areas of Nevada, for example.
Right. There was way too much building going on there. So, you know, you mentioned the herd mentality. You know, look what happened over the last couple of days. It was gloom and doom up to last Wednesday or Thursday in the markets. Not much has happened dramatically, except for maybe the resolution, or at least the temporary resolution in Greece, Bernanke speaking. And all of a sudden, you see markets turn on a dime. And they move up a little bit on Friday. They don't go down. Monday, they come in a little bit up. They come down a little bit. And then today, everybody's happy, happy. Stocks are being bid up like ridiculous. Cena was down at 77. It closed at 94. Stocks all over the place are up 5 and 6%, all over the place. And I'm not talking about – I mean, it was almost like the entire screen was lit up red, green today, very much opposite of what it was a few days ago, like somebody pushed the button to buy.
I don't know. That's a herd mentality, it seems to me.
Yeah. Herd mentality plus, you know, you have when these major testing points, the S&P, Dow were testing their 200-day, 50-day, they passed through 200-day moving average, and they bounced, big-time bounced. The small caps were up 2.2% today, I think it was. So we'll see also. I think there's going to be what we saw last time after Bernanke spoke when he guided down the economy. Goldman just put a 2% GDP in for next quarter. That there may be, again, a build up into it, temporary hold as he's, you know, as the minutes come out, and then anticipation and potentially, you know, a layoff after that. Kind of a realization. So FedEx, one of the companies you own, by the way, is reporting tomorrow. Now, this is going to be a good, I think it's going to be a very good take on the global economy. Because they could tell what's happening, right?
I'm going to get bounced out.
I don't know if you've been bounced out. I know you were just – I'll talk to you about Adobe in a second. You just were bounced out.
Finally.
Well, that's good because they came out with earnings tonight and they're actually down and you got picked out right beforehand. But FedEx are reporting. So I think that it's going to be interesting to watch. And if anybody's looking at – you know, you want to get a peek inside the global manufacturing and sales and economies, you know, take a look at – maybe the transcript or listen to the conference call to find out what's happening with China, what's happening with Japan, where they're seeing the cargo issues, what's happening with oil prices and their margins. Did they hedge, of course, for them individually? What is their take on the flow for the next quarter? They're really good at showing that. So that's going to be happening tomorrow, I believe, in the morning. So we'll be able to really get a peek into, I think, the Asia situation is really what I'm interested in, to see how much that has slowed. I mean, Japan's exports slowed 10% year over year, last just announced 2 days ago.
And with their yen being what it is, you wonder why?
Right, exactly. But their imports moved up, which again is the same discussion, right?
Yeah.
Imports looked a lot better. But the yen still isn't selling off. The yen is still at the $80 range. Hmm. And they're talking about maybe not having any stimulus, but I don't know how long that's going to last.
So I've got in the driveway, I've got a Volt.
Oh, how do you like it?
Well, they gave me one to test for the next 5 days. I'm driving it around. It's interesting. It's a little different than what I expected. It's like a Ford. Actually, General Motors and Ford seem to have some sort of a space race going on for how much more gizmos and gadgets and crazy software systems and subsystems you can put in a car before people just go crazy trying to figure out how to even use half the stuff.
Or eventually live in their car because they don't need to have anything else.
This one's got I thought Ford's got a lot of stuff going on, but these guys are pretty much keeping up. But there's a couple of interesting things about the car. For one thing, it's always electric. It's not like a hybrid in any way. Mm-hmm. It's got a little motor in it, but the motor's only a high voltage charger. So if the thing starts running out of poop, the motor comes on and starts charging the batteries so you can keep driving. You can drive for about 350 miles with the motor running.
So it's like a generator.
Yeah, it's like just a generator. And it's more like and I thought this was always a good idea. This is like the way a diesel electric locomotive works. Mm-hmm. You know, those things are all drives to a big Elco or whatever those big engines are is all electric. Yeah, those generators, those are those big diesel engines are just generators. Mm-hmm. So the car's like that. And but it's got like all these crazy things that you've only heard about, but they have it. Like, for example, when you slam on the brakes,
yeah,
the brakes become they go into the generator system, and as you brake, it's actually charging the batteries.
Wow.
You know, that kind of thing, which is something mm-hmm. people always talk about, but you never see it.
Right.
And I don't know. It drives fine. It's got – it's kind of – I don't like it off the line. It's a little – doesn't have a lot of zip. But when you get to about 15 to 20 miles an hour and you punch it, it actually is pretty remarkable. So between about 25 and 55 miles an hour, it really gets going, which is good for passing, I guess.
And what about the extension cord?
It's pretty long. You plug it in, and then you have to tuck my car up into the top of the driveway where the plug is near. And then it's charging now. It takes about – the car only really goes 40 miles on battery only before the motor turns on. And so I let it go down to nothing, and it tells me it's going to – I plugged it in around 6 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
and it tells me it'll be ready at 6 a.m.,
Wow.
So it takes about 12 hours to put 40 miles into it.
40 miles at what mile per hour?
That really anything under 50 miles an hour, it's all the same. It doesn't mm-hmm. It's not like a gas car where you punch it and you're wasting fuel.
And how much gas does the extra engine take? How much
what the capacity is, but it's good for about 350 miles.
That's what a regular car does. That's
yeah,
the same thing.
It's supposed to be about the same. And the average, generally speaking, if you keep charging it with the battery, or with the power, it gets about 250 miles to the gallon.
Really?
That's what it says.
Wow. And is it comfortable to drive? Does it feel like are you safe in it? Do you feel safe?
Yeah, I do. It feels like all the new cars. They all have a certain kind of, the Lincoln does, the Fords do. These cars do. It's this new style where you kind of feel like you're crunched down into the car a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're not high in the car. Your shoulders aren't above the sight line of the window. It's not particularly. It's cockpit like. I'm not enamored with that style on any of these cars, but they're all that way. So it feels right. Pretty general. Yeah.
My folks have the new Ford something or other, and they just keep on text messaging me from the car.
Oh, one of these cars that you can do that. You can do that. I think you can do stuff like that on this car. I'm not sure. It's got all the regular plugs and everything. I'm a little – the only thing that disappoints me so far is not, the ride or all the rest of it is just, standard new car, high quality. It seems to be well made. Is that the car's style is not unique enough to engender that double take that I'd love to see.
Right.
You got a Volt. Like, it's like a car. Nobody makes a car like this. I mean, there's a couple little puddle jumpers from Japan that are useless. But nobody makes this pure electric car except even their car, if you don't have a – that hasn't got a motor, the Tesla – but you'd think that it would be stylish, so stylish, that, or some look to it, so when people saw it, or they'd say, hey, that's a Volt. What do you think of it? Nothing. I might as well be driving a Chevette.
So, and that's no fun. That's no fun, for driving a Chevette. I had something like that. I had the Pontiac T1000 as one of my first cars with a four-cylinder, and I felt like Fred Flintstone, with how to use my feet to get going.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it's fine.
Yeah. So Adobe, I mentioned Adobe had earnings, and they made their numbers, and the numbers were, I think, 50% growth of earnings over last year, something really good. But shares were off about 3% overnight, which is what they made during the day. And there was a discussion that about 10 to 50, there's a big range, $10 to $50 million of disruption due to the Japanese tsunami. So we're seeing that again come through, that there's some disruption, and they're not sure how long it's going to last. And I think you and I talked about, how much could the disruption really hurt Adobe, a software company. But I guess it probably hurt due to the fact that, if you go way back in the supply chain and the peripherals, and you look at the companies that are affected, and those companies then couldn't utilize maybe hardware or ship out hardware, therefore they couldn't put on Adobe products.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose.
But then again, maybe it's just a big thing to say and just to blame it on something.
Yeah, that's more my guess. Adobe also came out with a 5.5 version of Creative Suite, which is their big moneymaker. I didn't get a lot of attention.
Well, it's a half. That's why. Come out with 6, for goodness sakes.
Well, I don't think they felt like it because I think I don't know how they're pricing it. The whole thing was confusing to me. I never got it straight.
All right. Well, that's the problem right there. That's it.
Yeah, no, I believe that is the problem. It's like I follow Adobe closely as a company, and I use their products, so I'm always keeping up with this. And once in a while, when I get into this confused mode, I have to assume I'm not the only one confused. I'm like a professional following it,
right?
And I'm don't know what's going on. So
do you think that it's? I'm still terribly. First of all, I'm still very disappointed with HTML5. In that, not that it's anything wrong with it, but it's still not very much standardized as an alternative. You know, there's some things like Scribd and a few other things we use for PDF, which is the easiest way to present on a web page, for example, if you're doing a report, not just in HTML. And it's just not there. I mean, I just don't understand, and maybe it's just my stupidity. I don't understand why Apple and Adobe just can't be friends with this issue. It's just like everybody's losing on the deal.
I have no idea why Apple and Adobe have had this issue for so long. There's some feud that started somewhere. I know it couldn't have been. I mean, when Steve Jobs ran off the first time and started his next machine, they used Adobe's display technology, which was open. I forgot what it's called, but clear text or something. And or something, post text. I don't remember. But whatever the case mm-hmm. was, they were very tight then, and then they've always been close. And then Apple went to. I think it was Apple when they went to some of these open. You know, the fonts that were OpenType. They mm-hmm. become OpenType since, but they dropped the Adobe fonts because they had to pay all these licenses and they were getting this other stuff. Clear, I can't remember the name of these things.
There's a long name for the one. There's some like funny name they use for their types.
It started as TrueType and it became OpenType and then it became something else. But anyway.
Something with an M, yeah.
Whatever the case, Adobe and I think felt irked by this. I think Adobe then started, I don't know, put the screws to them on. I don't know. I'm just babbling here, if you haven't
yeah,
noticed.
Yeah, but it's at a point, though.
Something's weird. You're right.
Yeah, that they shouldn't do that. But anyway, so Adobe was down after hours. But that's usually what is the knee-jerk reaction to earnings lately. You know, it's just like, you know, sell it. There's nothing else coming out for a while. Let's just move aside after the earnings come out and move over. Hmm. And people taking profits. But we'll see what happens over the next few days with Adobe. But oil is the thing I wanted to mention to you. That have you been watching oil? It's been getting hurt pretty badly in all sorts of market conditions.
Well, there was a bunch of announcements. They're going to change some rules about how to trade it, and they're threatening all the speculators and all the rest of it.
And Saudi Arabia has mentioned that they're going to open the spigots wide,
right?
Against OPEC.
Yeah, supposedly.
Supposedly, so they say they're going to do that, and they're going to keep on doing it. And now there was reports tonight out of Goldman that said something to the effect that Libya is going to open up and have a lot more production, and that's that light sweet crude that's traded primarily for Europe and other, you know, outside the U.S., the higher priced crude that you see. And exactly. So that looks like it may have some kind of a downside. You know, when Goldman starts blathering about these things, you know, they go in the short direction, at least temporarily, till they can pound you in the face with it. Hmm. On the other side.
Well, maybe it's headed down. Maybe it's finally headed back down to where it belongs, which is $50.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let it get below 75 because they want to make some money over there too. You know, the oil rich nations. You know, and they've been doling out some money to their citizens after protests, etc. And they, as well as other countries that are involved in oil and commodities, have been spending a lot. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've seen. Have you seen retail lately? The high-end retail? Things like Fossil and Tiffany?
Yeah,
and,
you mentioned that in your note here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're at all-time highs.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Well, I guess it does, because the people that are still working and they're still doing well in the environment still buy this stuff. Right. I've never thought of fossil as being high-end anything, personally. I mean, I thought they were always just a practical kind of quasi-fashionable fashion statement, cheap stuff.
Well, then you haven't looked lately, because Fossil owns things like Michelle, you know, who, you know, the watch brand Michelle, and they own a whole host of very a variety of high-end products. They own Michelle, they own Zodiac, Burberry, Burberry, they have Relic. There's a couple others they own that are pretty big names that are much higher than just the Fossil. Zodiac, I mentioned that one.
And of course, you have Tiffany's, an all-time high, you mentioned.
Yep.
Which, of course, is only because of Newt Gingrich.
What does that have to do with Newt Gingrich?
He gives him all his free publicity. Anyway, just a joke. Never
mind. Yeah. I hope he's not going to be considering the continuation of his aspirations.
Yeah. No, he's going to continue because he can collect money and get some ancillary money that's not part of the campaign, because he's got all these foundations and stuff, and he'll walk away with a bunch of money.
Nice. So pretty much the same routine.
Yeah.
As last. Nice. Just bring it back for one last hoorah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. He has all of his people are leaving him, you know?
Yeah, because they know he's not serious. I think that's the reason.
Yeah, I would think. So, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, because it happened between these episodes, was Research in Motion's earnings.
Yeah.
Did you listen to any of that or see any of that?
Yeah, it's not good.
That's an understatement. I listened to the conference call.
We talk about this constantly, that these guys are in a, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place with the way things have changed.
And the thing that I found most interesting in the conference call was that the management was on the defense on everything, even before the question and answer period. They were on the defense talking about, you know, how they're right and what they're doing is, you know, the right way to do it, and they don't want to put out a product that's this or that, you know. And meanwhile, they're missing the back to school season, because which is generally a very good season for phones and smartphones, because the product isn't going to be ready up to whatever standards they want it to be. So they missed that whole quarter's worth of, or the annual, one of the best times of the year. They continue to believe that their platforms are solid, and they really didn't take any blame or criticism very well at all. And I thought that was, after I wrote that, I wrote a whole summary of it. And after I wrote that, I went around snooping around to see what other people wrote about past conference calls to see what, you know, what was the same thing, stubborn management. Management needs to change. You know, that they're just not listening to anything but themselves. It's kind of like the Motorola Razr story. You know, that was the hottest thing out there, and the Motorola wouldn't change their ways, and they saw the whole market just passing by.
Yeah, success can kill you.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that Research in Motion was down, what, 50% in the last month or so?
Yeah, it's looking good.
Had a big bounce today. Just everything was going up today. So things were just bought, short covering going. That's a classic example of when you can tell that there's a lot of short covering going on. When Research in Motion has been just obliterated over the last week or so, and just all of a sudden, one day, it has a 10% pop. Because, you know,
yeah,
the shorts got spooked.
The shorts are, or they're just taking their profits and going someplace else. I mean, that's possible.
Right. Yeah, and shorts will usually buy at any price and not be patient, because you have unlimited loss potential, right?
Right.
Whereas a long buyer may not sell at any price. They may buy some more. But shorts will usually run something up pretty well.
Yeah, generally speaking, the shorts don't short more.
Right. Until it gets to a certain point, and then they turn around and they'll reshort.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a different mentality.
Yeah. I want to ask you something. All week I've been wondering about something. I've been starting to hear more and more of these comments and these little quips, you know, like soft patch, green shoots. You know, we heard about that the last few years. This jobless recovery.
Jobless recovery has cropped up again. But I have to tell you that in 2008, I believe, or 2007 perhaps, it's the first time I heard the term. It was used all the time. In fact, right after the when the bottom finally hit, I guess whenever it was, there was one guy after another calling it that we're going to saying or predicting we're going to have a jobless recovery, And I think we may have talked about it on this show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
About how, what does that mean? I mean, how do you have a jobless recovery? And then we, you know, determine that it was just essentially you cut, and you get the bare bones and you keep cutting and you never rehire anybody unless you absolutely have to. And then you are reluctant, so you, which causes slow growth because you're not going to push it. And so you get nothing. You get no jobs.
Yeah. So, and so I guess my question is, you know, and you have less worse was always used. You know, you don't see less good or you know, it's always these positive silver linings, this quantitative easing versus printing money. What's the story with all that? These little titles.
Well, as a writer, because I do this, I've done it. I've coined a few terms now and again, and it was a part of a coinage of one of the really famous terms. As a writer, you're always trying to dream up some sort of a moniker. I mean, you want to be the guy or lady who, and there is the person actually was a Bay Area writer who came up with the word, for example, yuppie.
Ah.
And, you know, if you're a writer and you've invented the word yuppie, I mean, you just, this is like, it's you don't get any money for it.
Yeah, no pay at all. There's you get no the trophy, though.
But, you know, you can say, yeah, I coined that word. Oh, you're the one that coined yuppie? Holy
so man. You have that party introduction that's built in. I was the one. Hey, by the way, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Bob over here, he's the guy who came up with the word yuppie.
Yeah, and so, there's less worse, you know, but these are all weak. These don't have any legs. Jobless recovery is pretty interesting, but I think a lot of people were saying that simultaneously. I don't know if anybody invented the word.
So maybe it was two words separated, but somehow got hyphened.
Perhaps.
Like the story I heard about how Calistoga was named. It was a guy from Saratoga that was really drunk, and they asked him where he was from, and Calistoga, something
this,
of that nature.
This is bull crap, if ever.
This is what I heard when I was in Calistoga.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I'm not going to make that up.
No, but somebody else did.
I'm sure. I'm sure. So we have another phrase or another little thing that I think you may know about. I've tried to find out a little bit about this, but I can't wrap my hands around this one. What is Bitcoin?
Yeah, Bitcoin. Well, Bitcoin's one of these phony baloney, off-the-book, gray market monetary subsystems that there was a bunch of – there was one before called Beans, B-E-A-N-Z, and there was another one called – about 1998, 1999, and there was another one that Whoopi Goldberg, I believe, was involved with. She may have been involved with Beans or this other one, which is something started with the J. I can't remember. But anyways, over, you know, about 10, 12 years ago. And the idea is you set up a secondary a system where you can, you know, kind of turn barter into coinage that then you can use, and it's somehow you get around the IRS or you scan or some. I don't know. It's always baffled me. I don't know why anybody does it. And this is the newest iteration, Bitcoin, and it's a virtual monetary system that's outside the governmental control. And supposedly better, but in fact, it's already been scammed and hacked.
But is this? It has something to do with your computer use. It was something about the use of your computer, and you can.
Yeah, you get some free coinage somehow You know, it's like the virtual money you get for playing some of these online massive multimedia games,
mm-hmm.
Or with a massive multiplayer, whatever.
MMPM,
I think. Anyway, whatever. I seem to be losing my memory today. So anyway, you know, some of these games you can play and you will get some money just for staying on the game for a while. They just kind of, instead of having to actually do anything or buying money with real money, this fake money that's online, I think you can get this kind of money on Second Life, for example, and some of these other ones. And for Katie, I think had the same kind of thing.
Is Second Life Bitcoin, still active, by the way?
Second Life, yeah. It's not it what it was, but it still is. It needs to modernize or something. Anyway, Bitcoin is – it allows – somehow you can get some free coinage for just hanging out somewhere or somehow. I don't know. I avoid even following it because I just think all these things are just hopeless.
Yeah, it seems that way. I was looking at it because I had cropped up in some article we were reading, and I was looking. I'm thinking, what in the world is this? And then, you know, there's no regulation over it. That's the whole point.
Yes.
And then how do you, right, you know you're not getting ripped?
Well, that's one of the problems. It makes no sense to me that people flock to these things. I mean, you can be paranoid about the IRS all you want, but, you know, if they wanted to, I mean, this is not going to do the trick if you want to hide out. If you want to get away from the whole system, you have to literally leave the country.
Right.
And move.
Yeah.
And stay out of the system completely. I mean, that's otherwise you're liable.
Yeah. You know, you're speaking about the system. I was looking at some recent headlines, and I noticed tonight or yesterday, maybe it was yesterday, that, you know, this whole Lehman Brothers thing just keeps on going and going and going, that the attorneys that are representing Lehman Brothers, their billable hours already have topped $300 million.
Wow. That's a bit.
I mean, you know, who pays them? I don't know. You know, when do they get their money? But $300 million of fees for this whole deal. It's amazing. I guess that was just in – yeah, that was just for them. And then total professional fees were $1.2 billion in total.
So that's – well, let's just take the $300 million. I would assume that we're talking about $300 an hour. So we're talking about a million billable hours. That seems like
what is that? What is it? I'm sure they're at 600, by the way. So even 500,000.
Okay. Well, seems I'm like just a lot of time down because they have to because they can't be using all their top guys at $600. It's got to have a few associates in there working for $150. I don't know.
You got the $50 per email.
Yeah. Right. That's right. Probably true. Yeah.
That's a lot of money, man. You got to love the bankruptcy attorneys that can get money out of someone who doesn't have any money.
Yeah, blood from a turnip.
Yeah, and they get it immediately. We were talking about your car before, and did you know that as of, I think, this coming January, the reports show that feeding your car corn, or the corn that cars are fed in the form of fuel, will surpass the corn that is fed to cows. Now, I was wondering all this discussion about water-based energy, right? This whole the mecca of all, you know, utilizing water to create some kind of energy to fuel your car, etc. If we start doing that, what happens to the water supply? Well, I don't think we quite think about a lot of this stuff.
Well, the water the water is interesting because first you have to split the water molecule into hydrogen and oxygen, and when you burn it. Or you run it through one of these processes, it goes back to water. So the water is a lot different than cars, fuel, and cows. So it wouldn't make a difference. It's zero sum. So with water, I don't know where you came with this crazy idea, but water goes back to water. So no.
Right. Oh, so that's not going to be a problem. It's just the corn.
Corn, yeah. Well, the corn is a problem. It's stupid. And the money is made by like Petrobrazil and those other guys. It's because they use sugar cane, which has a real high, it really produces a lot of alcohol. Corn, you have to run it through a refinery to produce either alcohol or this high fructose corn syrup. It's all refined. It's a refined product run through similar to an oil refinery.
Well, I hope those cows appreciate, you know, what they're giving up.
No. Grass-fed's better anyway.
Okay. Well, there you go. Existing homes came out today, the lowest in 6 months. Supply is rising. So I guess the housing market's still not out of their slump.
Yeah, what a jip.
So, I mean, that's I think, more important, the whole existing home market than the new, because the supply is a much different process, right? New homes can be regulated by the amount that builders are going to build, et cetera, you know, supply-demand. But existing homes, obviously, are the ones out there already, and that not selling at all is also a tremendous problem. I find that to be a much greater problem than the new homes.
Yeah. It's a huge problem. It's the bank's fault. They won't give anybody loans. I mean, people need to be able to buy and sell houses. I mean, yeah, it shouldn't be like buying and selling stock. You shouldn't be able to just get rid of it in 2 seconds. But, you know, if you had to put your house on the market and wait 2, 3, 4 months to sell it, it slows the economy down.
And it's done. Yeah, it's done that. We'll see if they have something to say about that tomorrow when Bernanke speaks. I'm sure somebody will ask the question about the housing market.
We'll see.
Yeah. He'll have something good to say, something uplifting. And then finally on this topic, we'll get to the stocks that there's a concern now about the contagion effect, although they think that because of Greece being at least somewhat under control, which I don't think that's the case, but that there won't be as much of the contagion issue. But yet the IMF has said that the Spanish government needs to continue to reduce public spending and increase its efforts to liberalize the job market, which the Spanish unemployment rate is somewhere like 21%.
Yeah, and if it's anything like our unemployment rate, which is 9-something percent, and the shadow stats guys have it at 25, 26%, I can't imagine what Spain's real numbers are.
Yeah, they have long and plentiful siestas.
Well,
I mean, there's not much. I mean, that's a real problem. I mean, I don't know how the banks. I mean, if our banks are suffering at this point, and we have an unemployment rate that's half, and we have an economy that has great output, or at least the potential for great output, and technology, what does Spain produce?
That's what they complain about. They've given all their production over to China.
But what do they produce to begin with, anyway?
Well, I mean, they have a car company that makes automobiles. It's a reasonable company, and they, you know, their cars are all over the place.
Olives.
Yeah.
Wine.
They go a lot of. Well, the wine business is huge in Spain. This is true. Agriculture, which is like California.
So Spanish flies.
There you have it. And then, I mean, I'm sure they have whatever it was they were producing at one time, they're not doing anymore because it's all been handed over to the Chinese. But I'm sure there are a number of products that are Spanish.
But none of them are coming to you immediately.
No, but I could say the same thing about if I asked you right now, what does Czechoslovakia produce?
No. You want to know what Czechoslovakia produces? There's a lot of things.
What?
They have a car company.
They do?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
They you ever heard of Checkers? Although they've outsourced it now. It's Chinese Checkers. Uh-huh. It's Chinese Checkers. Uh-huh. And what else do they do? Really, what do they do?
Water. I have no idea.
Oh. I thought I was going to get a good answer there.
I don't know. I mean, they produce – I have no idea. We don't know. We have to open up one of these almanacs and see what these countries do. I mean, it's kind of pathetic. We should know this. But
well, not every country. I mean – But we know the top 10. That's about it. All right, so you want to take a look at some of the stock ideas and things that we have on our little sheet? I will tell you that a lot of things were stopped out, or a lot more things were stopped out.
Yeah, a bunch.
Yep. And by the way, this is if you go over to DH Unplugged, you know this by now, the drill. If you go to DH Unplugged, there's a little link at the bottom that will show you a Google spreadsheet that is updated live with the information from Google on the price of the stocks, where we said, okay, you know, for fun of this game, we're going to buy it at this price or at this time.
And
we use a stop, right?
Yeah, and I want to mention something. We have the recent stops. We have 9 of them, and only 2 of them lost money. The other ones made big dough.
Big money. I mean, I got to tell you something.
No, 59% on the short on silver, 22% on LinkedIn. Metro PCA is 35%. The Camac Energy was a huge loser, but that was a penny stock, so it doesn't really make a lot of difference. Everything else is up.
Well, the beautiful trade was the perfect. I got to tell you something. Seriously, the perfect setup you had on Pandora.
Yeah, that was a killer.
That was just, I mean, you got it both ways. You got it on the up and the down. 16% on the up and 41% on the down.
Yeah, now if I could just do that for a living.
Yeah. No, but that was great. I mean, that was awesome. And as you looked at LinkedIn, I mean, LinkedIn, you got out right before it jetted up in price today. Although it actually, LinkedIn was up. Oh yeah, 6%. What was the one that was down today? Oh, Pandora was up 8% at one point today, then finished down 7.5%. And look at you can see Sino Forest down 28% today on that.
Yeah.
And then, but again, this is just a game and something we do for fun. Some ideas that we have. Sometimes our clients at Horowitz Company may own these. You have to do your own research. Not a solicitation to buy or sell any security or recommendation at all. Seek personal financial advice or do your research before buying anything. So just going over some of these. IBM is holding in there pretty strong. I got to tell you something. I mean, at the 160, 170 range, very, very strong. FedEx we'll find out more about tomorrow. Chesapeake, I'm surprised. I thought Chesapeake would have done a lot better with some of the things I've been reading about them.
Yeah, that was oddly turned out to be an odd dog.
Yeah. Qualcomm hanging in there. GM short is great. Still, it just can't get above that $30 range. What else here? No. Okay, so back to the ARM, the ARM Holdings and Intel. Both aren't doing well, but Intel's down 7%, 7.5% actually. Crude shorts up 16%. C-Trip is, it's getting really close to being stopped out. It's just not going anywhere. China's online travel. Bridgepoint Education was down, but came back roaring back. Crocs up 9.5%, hit 52-week high today. Silver's flat. Friend Finder, awesome. Awesome short. I don't like to short things under $10 because it's just get a little tricky. But Friend Finder, you shorted 578 and it's now at 360, a 37% gain. Beautiful. What was the reason for that? You just figured, hey, you know, this LinkedIn thing and this Facebook thing is getting out of hand?
Pretty much that, and it's just not a company that ever impressed me. You know, I mean, it's just that the Friend Finder's the one to kind of the sleazy dating service.
Maybe I should check that out.
It's sketchy. I mean, they have, you know, they're the ones that keep, you know, if you sign up for it. I know the guy who started it, and he sold it to Hustler or Penthouse or somebody, and then they went public. It's one of those things that it's a little sketchy. It seems like it doesn't seem like a long-term viable. You know, it's not. I wouldn't do the same thing to a Match.com, let's say, or eHarmony. That's a little more on the
or JDate.
Somebody signed me up, or
for JDate.
It's like somebody signed me up, or for JDate. I think it was just a mistake in the email because all of a sudden I stopped getting the mail, and I think somebody realized that they are paying for somebody else to get these solicitations. But it's all around the Pittsburgh area.
What, JDate?
Yeah, the JDate. I kept getting these emails. Oh, so and so in near in downtown Pittsburgh. You know, she wants to meet you.
And, oh, nice.
And I'm thinking, I'm looking at this. What am I getting all these? I figured some guy was just, you know, throwing, it was a goof, you know, just to kind of harass me for some Macintosh column I wrote. And so I get this J. There are all these women. They're all in their 50s. I guess I was set up as like an old guy looking for an old Jewish woman to harangue me. And so I'm getting all, but it was always around, it was in Pittsburgh, because everyone's in Pittsburgh. I'm thinking, geez, I was going to write in and say, hey, I think you're sending me the wrong guy, but I was kind of getting a kick out of it, so I didn't do anything.
Right. I'll tell you something. You know, we talk about, what to pick, what's going on with the markets. I would think that the markets are still in a very significant downtrend with a lot of distribution. And you see these kind of days. I got to tell you, a 1.2% day is not an impressive day. And the volume was better, but lousy. Yesterday's volume was horrible. It was the sixth worst volume of the year. And it just has all the makings of still a little up rally in a downtrend. I think we can get to about 13, I'll say maybe 13, I'll go on the outside, 13.10-ish on the S&P. And then I think we may continue down. I still think that first, second week of July, we'll see a pop again due to earnings. But, you know, depending on what the earnings come out, it's going to be a real concern. And I think the outlook is going to be looked at very carefully this time around. But, so the markets are in a little bit of a sideways chop here. And I'm just not really willing to put anything out there that I think was going to do well. The only thing I would look at is like a Sina. Sina popped 20% today. We like Sina, but there's a lot of distribution I think that is laid off. So I'd possibly short Sina just for a little fun. I don't think we'd do this in our real accounts right now, but we'd possibly short Sina, seeing if we can kind of get a little bit downside action there. But I think the downside is probably limited to about 15% max, which is a lot. But, so I would possibly look to, you know, if it gets down there, to cover it quickly. So that's the one thing I would possibly recommend. But I'm really, I have no conviction on anything else right now in the market.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I'm not gonna actually put that. I'm not gonna put that in there yet. I think if we can get another 5% on Cena, then it would be probably a good short under 100. But again, it's just there's enough on the list right now to keep everything going. I think there's a great list here. You know, it's holding. We'll see if Silva could finally fall out of bed. So many times it's been down 1-2% overnight, and then kind of during the day it just starts rallying because the dollar just keeps on getting beat up. And that works inversely. So we'll see. I think that Silva still has the opportunity to get really slammed here if the dollar starts moving higher. If the euro starts breaking down, they'll turn that trade quickly.
So there's one chart you might want to take a look at I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
AHGP.
AHGP. Alliance Holding Group. This is is this a mutual fund? Let's see what they do.
No, it's a metals. Materials company.
Oh, Resource Parts, yeah. Right. Alliance Coal. That's interesting. Yeah, some of the coals really popped up nicely today. All right, let's look at the long-term chart here. Yeah, it's down from where it is. Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, it's interesting. It looks like it may break its downtrend here if it can come up about a point from here.
Yeah, let's see. Let me go to the stockcharts.com.
23% profit margin. When are they coming out with their earnings?
I want to change this to a weekly. I have to follow these rules of yours. And I want to change the parameters to what was it again? 15? It was not, what was it?
HGP. You want to change it to 10 and 10 and 40.
10 and 40, okay.
That's the moving averages. So that's the equivalent of a 50-day and a 200-day moving average. Let me change mine, see if we could look at things together. 40, 10 and 40, okay. Yeah, it's a definite downtrend. It's below it's below everything there. It bounced off its lower, I guess, the long-term Bollinger Band.
I guess I should have bought it at 10.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. But the problem you have here now is getting across. First of all, you have high volume pickup on the downside. You have let's see where the support is. You got plenty of room. You got some support here. You got some reasonable support here at this 44 level. There's definitely a bunch of support right here. You can see how it based out there the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And then popped up. You have the 10-week turning down very sharply is going to cross below its 200 or its 40-week, which is a problem. Usually that's a sign for potential distribution. But, you know, if you can get above this 10-week, that would be helpful. If a global slowdown happens, the coal companies are a problem. You know, if they start talking about, again, the idea of, you know, M&A and the coal companies come up, it could be good. Interesting. I just don't like the chart.
All right. I'm not putting
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's just interesting that there's some insider buying going on. And
I mean, I like the basing
like the
pattern
Mac
here at 44.
The MAC might be turning up. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. I don't trust that anymore anyway.
Yeah, the MACD is, I mean, it's overused and it's interesting to look at, but I think you have to look at it with a lot of other things.
Yeah, it's always great in hindsight.
Right, exactly.
It's like, well, yeah, look. You know, you can see that it worked great. You know, then when you do it in real time, it never works.
Yeah, the weekly MACD looks like crap. Let me see about the daily. Yeah, it's still in an over sold situation here, which is good. It did turn up a little bit. Again, you had that basing, but you have, you know, potentially a head and shoulders pattern. You have to really break. Let's see what this would be. I would say if you could break 47.5. You have a shot here of something happening. But the volume's been crappy. It got gap downs. You got this big rush up from 48. That was when in March. I mean, if we have a rally, this thing will move back up, probably see a bit of resistance towards the 48 level and then 50 level.
Yeah. Well, I'm not seeing a rally.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, my friend. We'll talk next week, and I look forward to it, as always.
Okie doke. We'll see you then.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.